We return to Numbers chapter 14 at verse 39, where Israel has just been told by God that they're going to have a 40-year total timeout because they have rebelled against going into the promised land. Everybody that's 20 years of age or older will die during this next 38 and a half years of time, with the exception of Caleb and Joshua, the two good spies. And I would assume that we're only talking about the gentlemen here, and more than likely their family members would have also lived with them during this time. And so the reaction of the people should have been, and this is a principle for all of us who are believers, if you get in trouble with God and you receive the punishment, you take your punishment as you should, learn from it, and move on with your life. You don't start telling God that, oh, no, I can do it. I can do it anyway. I'll be okay. I'm sorry. It's too late at that point. And so this is where Israel just makes things worse, or at least a large component of the rebels make it worse for themselves. As I mentioned last session, God is going to take good care of these people in the wilderness. They're not going to have a horrible life. He's going to feed them every day, water them every day, keep them healthy, keep them warm, but not too warm, keep them cool, but not too cool. Everything will be fine if they'll just take their punishment and behave themselves from here on out. But this bunch won't do that, and so they end up dying sooner than they should have. Numbers 14:39. When Moses told these words to all the people of Israel, the people mourned greatly. They rose up early in the morning, and they went up to the heights of the hill country. So they get an army up to push northward, like they would have done if they had been ready to enter the promised land at this point. Here we are. We will go up to the place which he who is has promised, for we have sinned, meaning we screwed up when we said we wouldn't go, so now we're unscrewing up the sinning part, and we're going to go. But Moses said, why now are you transgressing the command of he who is, when that will not succeed? So why are you doing it again? God told you what the deal is, and now you're going to go against that? Don't go up, for he who is not among you, lest you be struck down before your enemies. For there the Amalekites and the Canaanites are facing you, and you shall fall by the sword, because you've turned back from following he who is. He who is will not be with you. See, don't you understand? The only way you would have been able to take this country in the first place was by God's supernatural intervention. Remember what he promised you. He said he was going to go ahead of you and chase these people out a little by little so that you could kind of take over the property. That was the original arrangement that God had in mind. It's not going to be that way now. Now it's going to be a lot more fighting going on. But these guys are going to find out what it's like to try to take on a superior enemy when God's no longer on your side, when he's just letting you do this by your own abilities, your own thought processes, you're going to fail. So the Amalekites and the Canaanites are going to clean your clock, is basically what Moses tells these guys. Verse 44, but they presumed to go up to the heights of the hill country, although neither the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is nor Moses departed out of the camp. Now, that's an interesting little bit of information here. In the original idea, everywhere that God went, which means the Ark is going, the peoples of the land would see God's presence, and that is what would terrify them. And they would scurry away. And Moses, of course, would be there attendant to the presence of God. And so would Aaron. But now that God has said, no, that's not the way we're going to do it. Moses doesn't go with these people. Aaron doesn't go with these people. And most definitely, the Ark of God's presence, His throne, does not go with these people. And so His cloud is going to be still here at this encampment while they go all by themselves. And so, predictably, the Amalekites and the Canaanites who lived in the hill country came down and defeated them and pursued them even to Hormah. It's about 60 miles or so, I think, as the crow flies, from where I believe the Kadesh Barnea encampment would have been located, about midway between the Gulf of Aqaba and the southern bay of the Dead Sea. So about 60 miles from there, due north, up to Hebron. Hebron is the southernmost major city of the hill country. And that area of the southern hill country of Canaan, we already heard that it's occupied by Amalekites and by Canaanites of various sorts. Even the sons of Anak, the Gugentes, the giants, the Anakim, the Nephilim, they're in that same general vicinity as well. So what happens is those locals get wind that a whole bunch of these invaders, because that's how they would have perceived them, are coming north, and they went out and met them in battle, somewhere there at the edge of the hill country, somewhere just south of Hebron. And it did not go well. The Israelis were being killed right and left. And they turn tail and run. And they get chased and defeated all the way to a place called Hormah, which is in the Negev. It's somewhere between the hill country and the encampment at Kadesh Barnea. And so all that was very predictable. And then the next thing that happens is they're going to do what God told them to do in the first place with all the survivors of that craziness. At this point, we're going to skip chapter 15, because we already included it in some studies where we were talking about the laws of sacrifice. We're going to go to the next chapter, which has a historical information to it, and that's chapter 16. We don't know exactly when this event happened, but it feels to me, so it's my opinion, and that's all it's worth, it feels to me as if it would be a natural follow-up to the events that we've just looked at, where they are told you don't get to go into the promised land like you were expecting to go. You have to turn around and spend the next 38 and a half years doing a timeout, just waiting until you expire. It seems to me that some of the people would object to Moses and Aaron saying that's the way it has to be. And so this is a rebellion against the leadership of Moses and Aaron. And it comes from within their own tribe, comes from within their own family group. They're relatives, cousins of some sort. Chapter 16. Now, Korah, the son of Izhar, son of Kohath, son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Pelet, sons of Reuben. So it's not just Levites, but Levites, you know, start the story. We've got some Reubenites as well causing trouble. They took men, and they rose up before Moses with a number of the people of Israel. 250 chiefs of the congregation chosen from the assembly, well-known men. So they have a governmental intervention. They think that they can get, you know, a large group of leaders to remove Moses and Aaron from their post of leadership. Verse 3, they assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said to them, "You have gone too far. For all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and he who is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of he who is?" So the challenge is, what makes you think that you can be the boss? What makes you think that you can tell all of us the way it has to be? We're just as good as you. We got plenty of leaders that are just as good as you. In fact, the whole encampment is just as good as you because we're all holy. Now, the next line is very interesting. When Moses heard it, he fell on his face. He humbled himself. Now, I believe he is heartbroken over the fact this is not going to end well. That's, again, my opinion, is that what puts him on his face is the reality that this attitude is going to get this guy and all of those with him killed long before they have to die. They could have very nice lives during the next few decades, but instead they're going to be dead. So he said to Korah and all the company, apparently while he's down on his face, God speaks to him. The Holy Spirit guides him into what to say next. So he said, "In the morning, he who is will show who is his and who is holy, and will bring him near to him. The one whom he chooses, he will bring near to him." So he says, "All right, you want to go through these motions? Fine, this is what God wants you to do. Take censers, things that carry the fire and the incense. Korah and all his company, put fire in them and put incense on them before he who is tomorrow, and the man whom he who is chooses shall be the holy one." So remember, the leadership of Israel is basically from the tribe of Levi, the priesthood under Moses, under Aaron, and Moses being a Levite, he's the governmental leader that God has chosen. And so if they want to play this game, then all they have to do is see who God accepts as acting as priests. Will he accept Korah and his family members offering incense there in the tabernacle? Now, we know what happened during the tabernacle dedication service. The two eldest sons of Aaron, perhaps they got drunk, but whatever it was that motivated them, they tried to offer unauthorized fire, unauthorized incense to God. And God rejected that illicit service by executing them on the spot with fire. And so what God is setting up again is the exact same scenario of somebody that shouldn't be doing it trying to lead worship to God. So you have gone too far, sons of Levi. That's what Moses says back. You guys have crossed a line. You're in trouble. Moses said to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi. Is it too small a thing that you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do service in the tabernacle of he who is, to stand before the congregation, to minister to them, and that he has brought you near him and all your brothers, the sons of Levi, with you? So have you forgotten the fact that you are special already? God has chosen you to carry the elements of the tabernacle from place to place, to help put it up and tear it down, to take care of the animals before and after sacrifice, and to help the people understand the laws. Isn't that good enough for you being special? Would you also seek the priesthood? Therefore, it is against he who is that you and all your company have gathered together. What is Aaron that you should grumble against him?" So they want Aaron's job, Aaron's family's job. They want to be the priests. So Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab. So they're part of this rebellion. And they said, "We're not going to come up. Is it too small a thing that you've brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you must also make yourself a prince over us?" So he's blaming Moses for pulling them back from the promised land. That's what they're saying here. "Isn't it bad enough that you stole the promised land from us by making us go this opposite direction? And now you think you can boss us around even more? Moreover, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance in the fields and vineyards." So you haven't followed through with the list of those who would inherit property in the promised land. You didn't give us anything. "Will you put out the eyes of these men?" See, are you going to expect us to just ignore it? "We will not come up." So no, you're not the boss of us. You can't tell us what to do. Wow. Moses was very angry. And he said to he who is, "Don't respect their offering. I've not even taken one donkey from them. I've not harmed one of them." This is one of those times that Moses, you can tell he's ticked. He says, "God, don't let them get away with this. Don't accept their sacrifices. Don't accept their offerings of incense, their prayers. I've never done anything bad against a single one of them, and this is the way they're treating me." And so God answers that prayer in a way. Moses said to Korah, "Be present, you and all your company, before he who is, you and they, and Aaron, tomorrow. Let every one of you take his censer and put incense in it, on it, and every one of you bring before he who is his censer. 250 censers, you also, and Aaron, each his censer." Kind of has a little bit of a foreshadowing of the whole Elijah and the contest with the prophets of Baal, isn't it? The singular good guy against all of the fraudulent bad guys. And that's pretty much what it is here. It's 1 to 251. So every man took his censer, put fire in them, and laid incense on them, and stood at the entrance of the tent of meeting with Moses and Aaron. And then Korah assembled all the congregation against them at the entrance of the tent of meeting, and the glory of he who is appeared to all the congregation. So here comes the flaring up of God's glory, or the sudden appearance of that individual representation of God's glory. And he who is spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, "Separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I might consume them in a moment." So God says, "Stand back. Stand back so I can just take them all out at the same time." They fell on their faces and said, "Oh God, the God of spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and will you be angry with all the congregation? So apparently Moses seems to have understood that God was going to wipe out the entire encampment, and not just simply the 251 troublemakers. He who is spoke to Moses, saying, say to the congregation, get away from the dwellings of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. So basically, everybody move back from anything that belongs to the people that are involved in this rebellion. So Moses rose, went to Dathan and Abiram, the elders of Israel followed him. That's the Council of 70. He spoke to the congregation, saying, depart, please, from the tents of these wicked men. Touch nothing of theirs, lest you be swept away with all their sins. So they got away from the dwellings of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Very wise choice. And Dathan and Abiram came out, and they stood at the door of their tents together with their wives, their sons, and their little ones. Not good for the people that are associating themselves with these guys. And Moses said, hereby you shall know that he who is has sent me to do all these works, and that it has not been of my own accord. So he's speaking this to everybody that's kind of moved back from this section of the encampment, which is right next to the tabernacle, by the way. Because remember, the Levitical families lived on three sides of the tabernacle. And then the priestly family lived in front of the tabernacle. So this is all happening in close proximity to the tabernacle, and everybody's moved backwards, and Moses is making clear what's about to happen is on these guys. If these men die as all men die, meaning just a normal death, or if they are visited by the fate of all mankind, then he who is has not sent me. But if he who is creates something new, and it's clear that God has told him what to say here. He's giving him very precise wording as to what's about to happen. If the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them, and they go down alive into Sheol. Sheol is the unseen world. It's where the departed spirits go. Before Jesus, everybody's spirit went there after death. They were separated into two compartments, one for the unrighteous and one for the righteous, and they waited until Jesus died and rose again, and the people in the good compartment, they got taken into the presence of the Father. But basically here he's saying they're going to get swallowed alive into the ground, because Sheol was pictured as being somewhere deep in the earth. So if that's what's happened to them, then you shall know that these men have despised he who is. If that's what happens, they're the bad guys. As soon as he finished speaking all these words, the ground under them split apart. The earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their households and all the people who belonged to Korah and all their goods. So they and all that belonged to them went down alive into Sheol, and the earth closed over them, and they perished from the midst of the assembly. That must have been a shocking miracle to see. The tents of these guys, all in close proximity to one another, the earth opens up underneath it. Everything, including the people, fall into that big hole, and then the earth closes right back over it, and there's just empty space where the tents used to be. Apparently, it just seals back up to what it was like before they'd pitched their tents there. And the people see this, and it freaks them out, as we would say. All Israel who were around them fled at their cry, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up. And the fire came down from he who is and consumed the 250 men offering the incense. So those guys that were doing the little test against Aaron, they get zapped at this exact same time, and they're dead. And then he who is spoke to Moses, saying, tell Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, to take up the censers out of the blaze. Then scatter the fire far and wide, for they have become holy. Because, you know, God's glory has touched it. God's fire has touched all these things. As for the censers of these people who have sinned at the cost of their lives, let them be made into hammered plates as a covering for the altar, for they offered them before he who is, and they have become holy. So the little censers, they're not going to be used as censers anymore. They're going to be beaten out into little flat pieces of metal that will then be added as decoration on the outside of the altar of sacrifice. And it says, thus they shall be a sign to the people of Israel, so that everybody sees those little decorative pieces of metal hanging on the front of the altar of sacrifice. That'll remind them, you don't try to seize leadership. God is the one that appoints leaders. So Eleazar the priest took the bronze censers, which those who were burned had offered, and they were hammered out as a covering for the altar to be a reminder to the people of Israel, so that no outsider who is not of the descendants of Aaron should draw near to burn incense before he who is, lest he become like Korah and his company, as he who is said to him through Moses. Now, again, you would think that that would tamp down on this rebellious attitude that has been so prominent amongst the Israelis, but that is not the case. Here's the introduction to our next section, verse 41. But on the next day, all the congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and against Aaron, saying, "You've killed the people of He Who Is." So even when God's judgment falls rightly on rebels, other rebels complain about the judgment of God. And you know that is not going to turn out very well the next time we get into the Word.